Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, here enjoying one of my favorite times of the week. I just love being here so we can touch one another. And I've brought along one of my favorite friends.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Aren't you glad he's come along? I know I am. And if you get our email, you know that tonight we have a very special guest, Leonardo da Vinci, and he's looking forward to being here and sharing some wonderful information with you. And Richard, for people who maybe are not on our mailing list, would you quickly tell them how they can get on our mailing list?
Yes. If you just go to our website, the2012countdown.com, and you'll find that there's a field at the top or bottom of any page on that website. Just enter your name and your email address, and you'll get an email asking you to confirm, and just click on the confirmation link, and it's all done.
That's wonderful. So for those of you who perhaps are not familiar with how we work, we connect with people on the other side, and I'm going to ask Richard to tune into Mr. Da Vinci's energy soon, but what I would like for you to do, who's listening to this, think of your picture of what Mr. Leonardo da Vinci might have looked like. Well, we have pictures of him, what he looked like, put it in your mind's eye, and then put your attention into the heart area. And you might be able to pick up some of the energies that Richard feels and is discussing. So, Richard, would you be willing to call forth Mr. Da Vinci?
Already done that. He's been sitting here waiting patiently.
Yes, he is a patient man.
And my overwhelming experience of him is this gentleness. This just sense of gentleness. Implicit in that is a love, but it's not a powerful love as I experience with some of the characters that we bring forth. And I experience his energy a little left of center, but there is this gentleness, wise gentleness, I guess I would say. There is this sense of wisdom about the man, as if he is watching, just taking it all in, witnessing what is happening. And I suspect he was very much like that in life, a great student of life, a student of all things in a way. But, you know, very unassuming is my sense. You know, not a loudly spoken individual, but this elegance, gentleness, and wisdom. Very interesting energy.
They're interesting words. Something we could all aspire to.
So, you're wondering if he has a message?
I would like to think he does.
Well, let's see what he's got to say. I appreciate this opportunity to come forth and speak to you in this manner. As I was saying to Carolyn a little before the beginning of this show, I am very joyful about this opportunity because few people have paid any great attention to my work in quite a long time. Yes, there are some who examine it a little, particularly some of my paintings, but there is such a breadth of things that I was involved in, some of which was hidden, and some have speculated on what I thought and what I knew. Any of you who have read David Icke's recent book, The Perception Deception, you will see that he has a quote from me at the beginning of many of the chapters in that book, because David is one who has the insight to get a sense of where I was coming from, get a sense of my ability to view the world, in a sense, to use that phrase that is credited to Yeshua, to be in the world but not of it. Of course, I was engaged in the world in very strong ways. I was creating on many levels, as you will know from your history. But part of me was detached. Part of me, in a sense, could have let life go at any point. I sought to live my life to the best of my ability, to a fullness, and also with an honesty and an integrity. And I feel I did that. And so I am very much at peace with the life that I lived and the legacy I left to humanity. And part of what David was picking up on my nature and, of course, my writings was the understandings that I carried about the nature of life and the nature of the world as you experience it. Some of you have come to understand to an extent how deeply manipulated and controlled your world truly is from what you might say is behind the scenes. And I was deeply interested in spiritual matters, in mystical matters, in esoteric matters, you might say. And I was something of a master of some of these traditions. I was very aware of the distinction between the teachings of the Catholic Church and the teachings of the one you call Yeshua, and the very large gap that existed between these two things. And indeed, I was quite a close follower of those fundamental teachings of Yeshua. You might recognize that the time that I was living was in many ways the beginning of what is known as the Renaissance, which in a way was an awakening of sorts, a re-energizing of thought after a period of great darkness for humanity. And there were those who were searching out the original teachings of Yeshua and his close followers that had largely been buried by the church. And of course, these things needed to be hidden from the church because they wished to stamp these things out. And the relationship between Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, for example, was well understood by those who followed these paths. You see, it is important to understand that really throughout all of history, the truth of things has always been there for those who wish to seek it. There has been an underground stream of truth, you might say, that can be tapped into if you are willing to search it out. And in ways, there were those who had brought forth some of these truths that had in fact been expressed to an extent through the teachings of the Cathars, but also in secret by the Templars, as most of you or many of you would know. They had these understandings of the true teachings of Yeshua, that the only temple that you need is the physical body, and that the, you might say, kingdom of God is within. And that indeed Mary Magdalene was not a whore, but in fact Yeshua's wife. There are some of these things that are so obvious if one has any understanding. And the first and simplest one is that Yeshua was a rabbi. And this is not something that is hidden. Of course, it is recognized that he was a Hebrew and that he was a Hebrew teacher within the Jewish traditions, or the Hebrew traditions as they were in those days. And if one looks closely at what has been written about him, it is very clear that he was a rabbi. And if anybody understands those traditions, it was expected that such an individual would be married and have children. It is part of the role that is completely different from what is expected of a Catholic priest, for example, where they are expected to not marry. Indeed, they're meant to abstain from any sexual practices, although, of course, that has been shown to be clearly not the case. But nevertheless, that is the image which is cultivated. And so the Jewish traditions with regard to a rabbi are very old, and Yeshua was a rabbi. And he was married and he had children, and his wife was Mary Magdalene. This is no great secret. The pieces fit together quite easily if you look. But like so many things in your world, the obvious is ignored when dogma is brought into place. So many of these things can be almost blown away with a little puff and shown to be the nonsense that they are. But they are reinforced with such commitment and such power and such threats, so many threats. And you have modern versions of this, which I do not particularly want to get into in detail, other than to mention a couple. And the obvious ones are things like the Holocaust, which was a manifest lie, and 9/11, which was a manifest lie. And they are reinforced and held in place by lies and deceit and threats and many other techniques that reinforce them. And this story of Yeshua was similarly reinforced and distorted and could be blown away just with a simple puff, like blowing on the head of a thistle. The seeds would scatter, the truth would simply emerge, the facade would just blow away if you puffed on it from the right direction. And the same is true of that myth about Yeshua and the myths that I have just mentioned. If you simply stand back and look at the facts, look at the reality of circumstances, there is simply no way that those stories that are told can have any validity. It is so simple and so obvious, but so many things have been done to give them strength, give them power in the world. And so I mention these things because there really are very powerful connections between the distortions that were put in place in my time and the distortions that exist in your time. Indeed, there are always distortions of various levels, and there are times when those are lessened to an extent. And so you might consider, in a way, the Renaissance flowering was part of this. And I feel I contributed to that broadening of understanding. And one of my paintings, which is of the Last Supper, has caused a great deal of consternation in more recent times, because some people have begun to recognize that the one sitting next to Yeshua is in fact Mary Magdalene, which indeed it is, indeed it was, because it reflected their relationship. And Dan Brown, in his way, whilst he wove a fascinating romping tale that is very entertaining as a movie and as a book, indeed there are some fundamental truths that he reveals there about Yeshua and Mary Magdalene being married. And indeed there are some that have pointed out that the two of them are leaning in opposite directions to form a V, which, if you understand the esoteric, is an expression of the feminine, indeed the divine feminine, when you have Mary Magdalene present. So to anyone with any eyes to see, this is a statement about the importance of the feminine and the power of the feminine as it was expressed in the work of Yeshua and his work in conjunction with Mary Magdalene. The feminine was a very powerful aspect, and some of Yeshua's followers, as history has recorded, such as Peter, were opposed to the presence of Mary Magdalene working so closely with Yeshua, not just as his spouse, but indeed deeply involved in his work, which was justifiably so because of her own training and skills and knowledge. So there was this, you might say, secretive revelation, revealing of that truth through that artwork, that indeed there was that connection, and that indeed Mary Magdalene was at the very heart of Yeshua's work, and it is expressed in that painting of the Last Supper, as Dan Brown so beautifully expressed. So it is important that this be acknowledged. And in many ways, I was fulfilling a role to contribute to understandings that could come forth in your time. You live today in what is currently a very dark time. There have been many dark times on earth, but the one that you are in at the moment is quite a dark time, and it's particularly dark because of the ability that humanity has to destroy itself, or if not itself entirely, certainly very large numbers of people very easily. And so the power that is in the hands of man to self-destruct, you might say, is something which has not existed for a long, long time. It has existed in the past, before life as you know it today, or as your history records it. There was a time when humanity had similar powers, but it has been a long time. And so, in ways, the time you are in is perhaps a most dangerous time if one looks at it simply from that perspective. Excuse me. But as most of you know who listen to this radio show, the time that you are in is a special one where there will be a bridge provided, you might say, a bridge out of this dark, difficult consciousness. It is not as if this consciousness will be transformed, which many people think it will, that there will be this lifting up of all which exists. I'm here to say that this is not how this will happen, but rather there will be the opportunity to step out of this difficult experience and, again, to use the phrase that I used earlier, to be in this world but not of it, in a unique way. And it is what most of you who are listening to this are here about. So I wanted to make that connection between your time and mine. But I also wanted to return, in a sense, to some of the ground that I covered in my life. Many have recognized that I indeed covered many fields of endeavor. And in ways, it was much easier to do that in that time than it is now. But nevertheless, it was unusual to carry the level of expertise that I did in so many areas. And part of that was because I was gifted, in a sense, with the ability to, you might say, span all of these areas quite easily. I was, you might say, quite intelligent, quite an intellectual of sorts. I was quite driven to use my mind, use my brain, you might say, to develop understanding. I was inquisitive. I was driven to understand, and you might consider I did not have a normal family life. I was unmarried, and my work was extremely important to me, and I, in many ways, worked many long hours to cover the ground that I covered. But I did it from love, from joy, from excitement, from passion, because I could, because I had the opportunity, because I had the time, and because I had the interest. And so there are, I will have to say, some areas of the material that I shared that did not originate with me. I acknowledge that I was a thorough researcher, and I brought forth work of others and indeed refined it. So some of the things that are attributed to me were not originally from me. So some of the mechanical things, for example, were begun by others, and I added my own understandings and guidance and refined these things. But my writings, for example, which some of which are known but some are not, were my own. And I feel I had quite some insights as to the nature of life, which I have touched on to an extent with what I've had to say here. But I feel I did what I was there to do, because I too had a mission, as you might say, anyone who is connected to the light does as they come forth. I had a mission to, you might say, refresh, in a sense, the expression of wisdom of the teachings that went beyond the dogma of the Catholic Church. And that was a difficult thing to do, but I'm satisfied that I did it, because it continued to flower and flow forth into the work of others. I recognize that I was an inspiration for many, and I, without being egotistical about it, I am very humbled by the fact that I was able to achieve that in my life. And so I am proud of the legacy that I was able to leave to humanity, and particularly the threads that have flowed through into your time that, excuse me, in part have been re-energized by those creative writings of Dan Brown. They have performed in their own way a very valuable service, and have chipped away a little at the power and control of the Catholic Church. They were not pleased with what Dan Brown had to say. And indeed, there is, as I say, a great truth to what he was bringing forth, though the bloodline from Yeshua and Mary Magdalene is much more comprehensive in its impact upon humanity than Dan Brown's story was conveying. So, my friends, this is the essence of what I wished to say, to once more refresh with you the fact that you live in a very special time where changes will emerge in your very near future that will in their very nature transform the nature of the human experience in ways that were simply impossible when I was present upon the planet. But that in a way I had some understanding of the truth of what it means to be human, what it means to be a spiritual being, what it means to be a self-master. There is nothing more valuable, more powerful than one can do than to master oneself. And I spent a great deal of time focusing on that. And in a way, what this time is about, this transition, is opening up that understanding of what it means to be human. And so, my friends, these are the key things I wished to share with you tonight.
What a beautiful message. I would like to thank you for the words you have given us from all of our listeners, from the bottom of our hearts. I have a couple questions that I want to ask, and I invite those in the audience who wish to ask you questions to call in and ask your questions. Ask you their questions. For people who wish to increase their creativity. Can you give them some advice?
If you wish to extend or increase your creativity, you first need to recognize that the world in which you find yourselves is seeking to shut down any sense of creativity. That creativity is a gift that comes from within. Creativity is not of the mind. It is more of the heart. It is of what you call of the right brain rather than the left brain. It is something which bubbles forth from within. Creativity and wisdom in that regard are very similar. They are gifts that are given to you. And my ability to paint in the way that I could paint, or really any of the areas where I worked, really came from my connecting within, being open to expressing what was given to me. Yes, I used my intellect, but I did not use the left brain in a controlling and dominating manner, but rather as a tool, a very creative and powerful tool. But creativity does not come from there. As I said, creativity is a gift. And the example that many of you would recognize is the composing ability of Mozart. The stories are that he would go for an evening walk after dinner, and in his mind he would compose an entire piece of music, and he would come back after his walk and write the entire piece out, all of the instruments, the entire piece, over an hour or two, simply write it out. It was all in his head, all mapped. And this is not something that he was using his brain to do, but rather it was a gift that was given to him. And yes, he had the insight, the ability, the skills to hold that in his mind. You see, that was a gift that was given to him. And in a way, creativity is a gift that is given, but it is given to all. And you simply need to be willing to open up to that ability that you have, to be open to the inner guidance that creativity is, to ask the questions within, you might say, about a particular subject, whether it be a matter for understanding or whether it be, as you have raised, a matter of creativity. It is simply the willingness to be a channel of sorts, to allow this wisdom, this creativity to come forth, because I use these words interchangeably because they are so closely interwoven. It is like being open to allow the universe to flow through you. That is really what you are doing with true creativity. Not something that you own, not something that you are, but something that is given to you and flows through you.
Thank you. That is such a beautiful answer. Laurie on line one has a question. Laurie, what is your question, dear?
Hello. Yes, I do have a question. I was told that I, in one past life, had an opportunity to meet face-to-face with Leonardo da Vinci, and had the opportunity to touch his face. I wanted to know if there was anything particular in that communication that was there with him that would be of value for now.
You want him to comment on that, right?
Yes.
So you were told that you lived during the time that he lived. Is that where we're going with this?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Richard, does Leonardo have an answer for this?
Let's see. Laurie did live in my time, it is true. and we were known to each other. And we were friends, you might say. And Laurie in that lifetime was a supporter of my work. So there is a closeness which is there that is bubbling up for her in this lifetime. It has no great significance for her in this lifetime other than that we carried that connection, that relationship, and it says things about the vibrations, in a sense, that she carries. In a sense, what it says about Laurie, because I, like so many that are connecting with the work that these two that are doing this radio show do or are, I was in that lifetime an incarnated cherubim, which tells you that my soul, my monad, is a cherubim. And there were a number of around me that were close to me that were also incarnated cherubim, and they supported what I was doing. And so there was this energetic compatibility. I carried a very high vibration in that lifetime, and in ways I needed support from others who could relate to me in that manner. And you, dear one, are one of those, and you have come forth in this lifetime to participate in the work that the cherubim are doing in this lifetime of preparation for these changes. So there is nothing specific about that lifetime that is relevant to you, but who you are is relevant. And that is the thing to take from that experience.
Gee, Laurie, what an answer. You must feel very good about that.
Thank you. I was hoping that it would give some sense of direction as far as what I might be able to do in this lifetime.
Laurie, I suggest that you email. If you email me, I think I'll give you a bit more understanding than we might do here. Just reply to one of my emails and we can talk about it.
Very good. Thank you.
I'm sure Richard will have some good advice for you, Laurie.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yes. I have a question. Was there a secret society of some sort that pass these truths back and forth to one another? Like the Last Supper, we have some interesting esoteric information in that painting. So was there a secret society that studied or researched this kind of information?
I mentioned earlier that this kind of knowledge and understanding always exists. There is an underground stream, you might say, when there is oppression in the world. And really, this knowledge and understanding has largely been underground since Yeshua's time. And at various points, there are, you might say, individuals with power who open up the opportunity for the expression of that underground stream more strongly than in others. And an example that you're familiar with is the Templars and the way that they built that path of cathedrals, beginning in Spain and finishing in Roslyn Chapel. And there were thousands and thousands of people who walked that path, you might say, in secret, unknown in essence to the Catholic Church, and yet they were using these buildings that were, for all intents and purposes, powerful bastions of the Catholic Church. And you have told that story very well in those DVDs that you have done on this. And I mention this because it is an example where individuals garnered sufficient power, individuals who understood the esoteric side of things, the truth, you might say, of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, where they garnered sufficient power to be able to provide support for that underground stream. In my time, there were indeed a number of secret societies that were of the light. And as you recognize, most of the secret societies in your time that were of the light have been overtaken by the dark. But there are still some small groups. There are still some hidden groups. But these, you might say, secret societies have been critical to the transfer of esoteric information of the light, really since the fall in Atlantis right down to this time. And examples that you know of are the Magi. And in many ways, what the Essenes did in Yeshua's time was to pull many of these streams of knowledge together. Excuse me, primarily to support that mission of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, to form a platform, if you will, from which they could do what they came to do. And so you might consider in many ways that the Essenes were a secret society of sorts, again, primarily made up by incarnated cherubim. Many of you will know this, but many of you perhaps will not. And so, yes, indeed, there were underground streams of that knowledge that came through, and I did indeed connect into this, and it was part of this knowledge that came to me that was expressed in that painting we discussed earlier.
Thank you. I'd like to touch a little bit on the Cathars, because there might be a little bit, people listening to the show might not know a lot about the Cathars. And do you have anything to say regarding the Cathars and the mystical things with regards to Mary Magdalene and Yeshua?
The Cathars, as you know, were in essence teaching the true teachings and indeed living the truth of what Yeshua and Mary Magdalene taught. And again, there were many cherubim amongst the Cathars, but the Cathars also had many other, what you might consider, normal human beings that made up the group. But they were not teaching the teachings of the Catholic Church. And so on that basis, firstly, they were teaching those fundamental truths, teaching people that the truth was within, that again, as I said earlier, the only temple that you needed was the human physical body. It is an extraordinary tool if you understand it and you understand how to use it, the chakra points, the energies which flow up from the base of the spine and spiral around the spine and out through the crown chakra, the so-called kundalini energies. These are but a very small part of what the physical form is capable of. And as you go within and follow that inner path through meditation primarily, you begin to awaken the skills and abilities that exist within you. It has been demonstrated quite recently in your time that the physical brain changes as a result of meditation. There are aspects of the brain that grow quite significantly as a result of meditation, just a few weeks of meditation. And so these practices, these understandings were very much part of the Cathars' teachings. In addition, their focus on love was such a fundamental part of their approach, which, of course, was a fundamental part of the teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. So there was that connection. And, of course, they were in southern France primarily, which was where Yeshua and Mary Magdalene moved to, as indeed quite a number of the Essenes moved and settled in that area. So in many ways, it was the seeds that were left, you could say, from their time in that area that bubbled up as the Cathars. People don't understand this. They look elsewhere for where the Cathars got their knowledge. But really, it came directly from Yeshua and Mary Magdalene living in that area in the time beyond the crucifixion, where they had their last two children, in fact, though they moved on quite quickly for reasons you understand. So the Cathars in many ways were the living proof, or you might say were living out the teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And of course, inevitably, the church shut them down, killed them all off because they represented such a threat to the church. The church could simply not tolerate their existence. They were teaching things which were completely inconsistent with the power and control and structure that the church had imposed. So this may help people to understand a little better who the Cathars were.
Thank you. Now, I don't know if you know this answer, but the Cathars were hiding, you might say, at Montsoukour, and were destroyed through war. And supposedly there were individuals before they gave up, went down the backside of Montsoukour carrying information. Do you have any concept of what that might be or might have been?
There were a range of things which were taken down the back of Montsoukour. And in fact, it was taken by some of the Templars rather than the Cathars, because the Cathars, in a sense, were accounted for. And they had made a commitment to those who were attacking them. So, in fact, it was some of the Templars that took that material down the backside of Montsoukour, quite a challenging path. And what they took down the back of Montsoukour was copies of the core teachings, you might say, of the Cathars, but also some relics that were of value not only to the Cathars but others. And some of those relics demonstrated the connection to Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And they were placed in locations where they would not be readily found. And they will come forth in the coming days and years to demonstrate the connection between those fundamental teachings and Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. So a core part of it was, you might say, manuscripts, but also relics from that time.
Thank you. Were you aware of the Book of Love?
I am aware of the Book of Love. I was aware of the Book of Love in my lifetime. It was one of the documents that had survived, and as you understand, it had its origins in those early days of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene and bubbled up through the Cathars, as you understand, and was an underground document that was one of those documents that connected back to those teachings. So I was very well familiar with the Book of Love in my time.
Such valuable information. Thank you so much. Francine is on line one. Francine, do you have a question?
Yes. I wanted to see if... Yes? Hello?
Do Do you have a question, Francine? Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I suspect that we lost Francine. Or did we? Francine, if you have a question, please give us your question so we can move on.
Can you hear me? I'm here.
I think she has a very poor connection. I think that's the problem.
Okay. Well, we won't wait then because we're practically at the end of the radio show. This has been, to my point of view, this has been such an extraordinary show tonight, and I would like to thank Mr. Da Vinci for all of the incredible, wonderful information, and hopefully he will come forth at another time. Is he willing?
I would be willing to come forth at another time if you wish me to do so. This is an important time, and if I can contribute in some manner, I would welcome that opportunity.
There's so much we wish to cover with you. Your knowledge is just so incredibly wonderful. And again, thank you for being here. And thank you, Richard, for bringing him forth.
I just can't get past his beautiful energy. It is just so refined, refined is a good word. There is this gentleness to it. It's extraordinary. Not lacking in power. It's a really fine, almost exquisite energy. I can't quite describe it. It's like an elixir almost.
I'm just amazed that he knew about the Book of Love. That's beautiful.
Yes.
So, Richard, we're practically at the end of the radio show. What would you like to talk about, dear?
Well, I wanted to touch on those extraordinary readings that you do, the Soul Origin and History readings. They really are, in my view, quite extraordinary. Carolyn connects with universal consciousness primarily and gets information about, firstly, the origin of an individual's soul, and by that I mean the monad, the totality of the soul as it was created, and understands the focus of that monad, because every monad has preferences, has, you might say, particular elements associated with mission, which bubbles up in, you might say, the focus of individual incarnations in various ways. And so that information comes forth, and then illustrations of past lives that have been on Earth primarily. So they really are quite extraordinary maps. And Carolyn did quite a few of these before her fall in August of last year, I guess, is where we are. And so she was really unable to work on these much for quite a while. And we've had a couple of these. We've been gradually working our way through over the last few months. And finally, she's starting to free up. So the possibility of being able to do more of these readings is opening up. If any of you are interested and haven't taken the chance to do this, there are some beautiful illustrations of these readings on the Soul Origin and History website, which I will provide a link to in my email. But I think it's just called souloriginandhistory.com. Just those words, no dots between, no links, just the letters or the words souloriginandhistory.com. And I encourage you to, if you do nothing else, just listen to them, or in some cases watch them, because our friend Adam turned some of them into some beautiful videos. But
that's
the material
wonderful.
There is just quite extraordinary. If you do nothing else, just go and experience those extraordinary readings. Some of the information is just amazing. And there's a story I know I've told more than once on one of those readings that Carolyn did, she was drawn to describe a house in that happened to be in Atlantis, a white house with wall hangings that were actually living, active hangings. Very interesting, different, little different from today. And so she was drawn to describe this house in some detail. And the woman who received the reading, Anne, replied when she got the reading saying, "I know that house. I see that house pretty much every day. I thought it was in ancient Greece or somewhere. Not only have I witnessed all that you described, but I can smell the flowers in the garden." I mean, it was just amazing. So they really are extraordinary readings. And not all of you have that kind of past life recall, but certainly some people do. And I have always found it interesting that she was drawn to describe that house in such detail, and it was something that was so clear in Anne's recall. Very fascinating.
It truly is. Richard, we have 3 minutes left. Is there anything you want to bring forth in those 3 minutes?
No, I'm just sitting here basking in Da Vinci's energy. I think it's gorgeous.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, I was thinking a little bit about the meditation with light.
Ah, yes. Well, I will put out a little reminder email about that extraordinary meditation, the Yeshua's Healing with Light meditation that he gave to Carolyn a few years ago now. And, you know, Carolyn herself has used it on and off over time, and recently she began to use it again. And we looked at it
every
thought,
day.
It might be something that other people are interested in. And somebody actually asked me if we had a meditation of some sort, and so I shared it with that lady. And then we thought, well, hang on a minute, maybe there are other people that are interested in this, and people are really enjoying it. It's a beautiful meditation. If you haven't purchased it yourself, I encourage you to do so. And there is a little sample on the web page that's associated with it, where you can hear the introduction of that beautiful meditation. So if you haven't purchased a copy, I encourage you to go to that page. There's a page on the 2012countdown.com website where that meditation is available, and I encourage you to order your own copy and work with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful meditation that certainly is making a difference in quite a number of people's lives now. It's a lovely meditation.
I feel like this guest that we have tonight was so incredibly wonderful, and the information was just remarkable. And if there is anyone that you would like to see us have as a guest, send that request to Richard, and we'll put it on the list.
Indeed, we will.
Well,
I want to thank you, Carolyn, for, again, the work that you do, you know, being in a place to do it tonight was just wonderful. And the questions you ask are always fascinating. So thank you for the role you play in making these possible.
And thank you, Richard. We couldn't do it without your work, your mastery.
Thank you. And thank you to Leonardo for
absolutely
being a fun guest.
Wasn't he now? Mm. I was just amazed at his answers, especially knowing about the Book of Love.
Well, that's one of your favorites at the moment.
Yes, it is.
Very good. So thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, everyone, and good night for now.
Good night for now. See you next week.